she's new, because I... Okay. Well, I'm very lucky today to have with me Dr. Lynn Marr, who's Head of Innovation Practice at the UK's National Health Service Institute for Innovation and Improvement. Lynn, thanks very much for coming. I wonder if we perhaps could start by telling us a little bit about the role of the Institute for Innovation and Improvement. We've got this huge health service in the UK, lots of challenges. How does the Institute contribute?
Well, the Institute's main focus is on helping the NHS overcome some of its greatest challenges. And that might take the form of looking for new ideas to help get over challenges that we don't seem to have got over in the past or not working as well as we might. Helping the workforce in terms of building their skills and capability and developing products such as manuals or case studies or toolkits that people in the NHS can use to help them with innovation and improvement.
So it's very much a support for the practitioners in the very large and very widely distributed health service, but it's providing them with tools and resources, but you're feeding that also with your own research so that you're generating new tools, new techniques, new approaches.
Yes, we like to consider ourselves as thought leaders, so we are absolutely searching for new approaches as well as supporting staff in terms of helping them to understand what these new approaches are, how they can use them, how they can benefit from them. And it is practitioners, but I'd also say we work with senior leaders as well. So, for example, helping chief executives to understand the benefits of working with other companies outside the health arena. For example, to inspire them with new ideas, learning from how the other companies do things like, for example, their own customer service work or access or systems. So we work with leadership teams right through the whole gamut of health service staff to, you know, junior frontline practitioners. And we've done some fantastic work with portering staff to help them develop their roles to provide a service and to help them develop a mechanism where they can be accredited for competencies that they learn. So, you know, really turning portering services on their head because they've never before had competencies or career aspirations. You know, they tend to be a group of staff who stay in the same place for 30 years.
So very much the work is around how to manage innovation more effectively and how to engage all the players in that very big system.
And how to make a practical difference.
Absolutely. And within that context, I know one of the things you've been working on is what you've called experience-based design. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about that and perhaps give us a couple of examples.
Yes, and this came across because, you know, the NHS does have an aspiration to work with patients, and we had a policy directive even called a patient-led NHS. But when it was examined how that translated in practically in the NHS, it was discovered by the Healthcare Commission that being an NHS patient was still very frustrating, and it certainly wasn't patient-led. Now, you know, it got us to think about, well, how do other industries approach their relationships with their customers? Because, you know, if we're putting ourselves in that situation, patients, we could see them as our customers. And so we started to look outside the health service and said, what do others do? And we, in our research, we came across some fantastic work that had been done by design agencies. And design agencies, they might design products, but there are design agencies who design services. You know, the way we go into a shop, the way we check in and out of hotels, the way we go into airports and you know, everything we do. And design agencies work very closely with the end consumer to design a service that gives that consumer a good experience, because if the consumer's had a good experience, they want to go back. Now, even though that's set in the commercial world, we realise that there is big gains from doing from learning and taking some of their practices into healthcare, because what we want is not only for patients to have effective, safe, timely treatment, but we want them to have a good experience. And what we were finding is even if the process of care was seemingly very slick, very efficient, very safe, it could be that the patient's experience of that care was diabolical in some respects. And alternatively, we spoke to patients who had probably not had the best clinical care that we would wish, but actually, because their relationship and their experience had been good, they would rate that care very highly. And so I think, you know, that led us to understand the importance of understanding the experience of patients as they go through their healthcare, you know, process. But in addition, we expanded that a little bit because we also looked at the experience of staff delivering the service. So looked at the experience of staff delivering the service and the experience of patients receiving the service. And both together are so powerful. People come from different mindsets, but when you get them together, we can very clearly highlight the areas in the process of care that provide a poor experience. And there's a good correlation between poor experience of staff delivering, because they feel they're not delivering it well, and the experience of patients receiving care. And then, you know, rather than what we might have traditionally done as professionals, have said, okay, we've got this information and now we are going to work out the actions that will improve this, we worked very closely with patients, and we call it co-design. So we're co-designing with the end users to say, how do you think this should be made into a better experience? How can we put this right? So we were getting their ideas. And some patients were leading project groups themselves. They were willing and able, and they actually led project groups. So that was kind of interesting in terms of the patient, typical patient staff role. But we've got absolutely tangible improvements for that, from that, and they range from issues around dignity. So for example, some patients were in a clinic and they were called into the clinic and taken around a corner and then asked to step on a pair of weighing scales. And when they looked up, they realised that they were standing right back in front of the whole clinic and everybody was looking at them in the waiting area. And, you know, they found that very embarrassing. And while nobody could see exactly what they weighed, the nurses were asking them to take their shoes off and their coats off. And the men were mainly worried about their socks, but the women were mainly worried about how much they weighed. But, you know, it was just uncomfortable and something that was very easily, in 5 minutes, put right. There were other issues around information, which we get so wrong, because we always write it from a professional perspective. And rather than, when we'd identified, you know, together with patients, the issues around information, rather than us going and writing it, or the professionals, the patients took it away. They rewrote it, and then they gave it back to the professionals and said, oh, put your official bits in. And so it completely flipped it on its head and changed the focus from staff, who were worried that this was going to create more work, because they had no more work. The patients were doing the work. And actually, we later found out that one of the patients had professional writing skills. So it's probably more able to do that than you know, any of the staff. There's lots of other examples. A particular hospital who were working with patients who'd had a stroke. Through experience stories, patients talking about what worried them, what caused them anxiety, they discovered a link between patients going to the toilet with a stroke that affected one side in particular, because the toilet roll holder was on the other side. When they reached over, they had more of a tendency of falling off the toilet or you know, falling into the wall and causing distress. Now, there was a correlation between the number of accidents, you know, people falling and hurting themselves, and the side of the stroke. And again, immediately when that came to light, this particular organisation put toilet roll holders on both sides.
Yes.
You know, very simple, easy things that actually, you know, benefit the patient. The patients now feel safer. They're not going to fall. They benefit the organisation because we don't want to be filling in accident forms. Staff don't want to do that. And often, if the patient had fallen, they, you know, could have hurt themselves and it would have prolonged the length of stay.
Absolutely.
So for the patient, for the staff and for the organisation, there's been quite massive benefits.
I mean, this is fascinating stuff, and clearly it has a link to some of the innovation theories around bringing users into the innovation process right at the front end. You've given some great examples. I guess the other question, though, that begs is, what are the difficulties in actually making this kind of thing happen? It seems to me almost a no-brainer that we want to have a better quality experience all around. What are the difficulties in actually making that happen?
I think some of it is about mindset. So we tend to do the things that we've always done. And then we get surprised when it turns out the same. And while we every organisation would say it does engage patients, and you know, we do an annual satisfaction survey where they tick the boxes, and organisations will have patient forums. But still, with all of those, there's a barrier. And there's a stopping point. So the patients are over there in the forum or writing their patient satisfaction survey, and the staff are still behind their barriers, if you like. What we found is it's quite a difficult transition for staff to relate to patients in a different way. They're slightly fearful, because we always talk from our professional perspective, and now we're talking using a slightly different language. We're not sure as professionals. We're a bit underconfident. We think we should be taking charge. You know, it was quite an effort when a patient wanted to run one of the project teams, because we think we should do that. That's our role. We're the professionals. So I think there's quite a lot of anxiety about who's in what role. What does that mean? The other thing is, this undoubtedly needs a lot of leadership support, because if staff are unsure, a typical response is, oh, well, we'll default back to our old way and we'll just have a forum. If there's strong leadership, which we found has made a big difference in some of our pilots, to give staff confidence and time, that makes a big difference. Telling stories, listening to stories, working with patients to identify what the key touch points are, where emotions and a certain part of the process come out as really important, is not a 5-minute job. And you know, you ask any staff member in the National Health Service in the UK what's the most precious commodity, and they'll say it's time. We haven't got time. So we need to find time, because actually if we can find time, we can save time. So you know, for example, the stroke case study I told you means that staff haven't got to write out accident forms or incident forms. Staff don't have to look after patients for extra time in bed. Staff didn't have to rewrite the information, but patients had a much better idea of what was happening. There's another example of where a patient was telling a story which was a safety incident. They needed a nurse to come and look at a drip. The nurse couldn't find the equipment, it took her ages, the patient was getting anxious, the staff member was getting anxious, and there could have been a safety incident. because that story came out, we were able to work together with the staff member and the rest of the ward staff and the patient to relocate the equipment and put it all together. The staff member had to go to three different cupboards to find the right equipment. And it used to take about 8 or 9 minutes to find the equipment. Now it takes two. Wonderful. You know, you need one or two things like that can easily release an hour a day.
Absolutely.
So time, but that is, I think some of that is a mental block.
I guess one last question prompted by this discussion of the user's experience, the patient's experience. Many of the examples you've given are around improving the quality of what's actually happening for everyone concerned. And that's, as we know from so many sectors, hugely important. Are there examples where this process also generates a completely new way of thinking, perhaps opens up completely new innovations?
Well, I think yes, and there's some examples around looking at how to provide emergency services. And there is a hospital in the United Kingdom who've joined up with a hospital in Australia, interestingly, who's also looking at their emergency services. And, you know, typically in England, we would do a business case, we would work with architects, we'd, you know, design a new emergency room based on our understanding of how emergency rooms work. But rather than going straight down that route, these hospitals identified a 3-month window where they would gather experiences of patients and of staff to say, why are they really coming in here? What do they really need? And what are some of the underlying problems? Because some patients do come into emergency services because they've just not been able to get access to the care they need elsewhere. And what some of that work has done is not only changed what would have been the floor plan, but actually changed the system. So what that prompted is more work with general practitioners, social workers and the local walk-in clinic about how we can help patients particularly to understand how to access services and how to get prompt services. So it's fundamentally changed the thinking about accessing emergency services. And I think there's more and more of that to come, really based on relationships where in other services, patients will take more responsibility for their own care, like they'll go home and fill in their own observations. Because, you know, we're all intelligent people. There's some people who it's absolutely not suitable for, but I think we do patients a disservice by assuming they're not competent. Well, you know, that's rubbish. Lots of patients can do more for themselves and want to. They want to be more involved, but typically as professionals, we've held that back.
That's absolutely fascinating. Thank you very much indeed, Lynn.
Thank you.